Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. According to the federal government, 1 in 5 Canadians struggle to pay for prescription medicines. 3 million people don't fill prescriptions because they cannot afford it. 1 million Canadians will cut the amount they spend on essentials like food and heat so they can afford to buy medicine. In the next few weeks, the federal government hopes to introduce a plan to cover the cost of prescriptions. Many, including the NDP, want to see a universal pharmacare plan. In fact, the NDP threatened to withdraw their support of the Liberals if that does not happen. Potentially, it could force an election. The program could cost more than $11 million in its first year. The local chapter of the Council of Canadians, a national social justice group, is trying to raise awareness across the country of the importance of a universal pharmacare program. You will hear why this local group feels it is important, and you will hear how they answer critics of the proposal. I am delighted to have with me today Bob Garson, a director with the local chapter of Council of Canadians, and Patricia Sinnott, a retired pharmacist and a volunteer with the local chapter of the Council of Canadians. Welcome to you both to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
I'd like to start with something very basic. What is pharmacare? And Patricia, I'll let you as a pharmacist start us off.
Well, thanks, Rob. The concept of pharmacare is part of what should have been introduced 6 decades ago, when we introduced universal health care in Canada. So that was to be the first rollout, an insurance plan across the country that paid for physician visits and hospital visits, acute care and primary care through the provincial bodies. And after that rollout, next was to come pharmacare and dental care, but those additions never happened. So a universal public pharmacare program would pay for prescription drugs, especially those on the essential drugs list initially, for all Canadians. It would not leave anyone in gaps. There are many people now, at least 11% of Canadians, without any coverage who cannot afford their prescription medication.
Bob, why do we need pharmacare?
We need pharmacare because everyone should have the human right to health care, and we're talking about the whole body. There are many Canadians, both those who are working and those who are self-employed, and those who are poor and in other situations, who cannot access the incredible cost of health care. And all reports, previous reports from the government, have supported that position. Canada, other than the United States, is the only country in the developed world that does not have a pharmacare program, and our costs are third to United States and Switzerland. That's an unacceptable situation, and I have lots of personal experience with people who have suffered as a result, some of them quite seriously.
Patricia, in your comments, you mentioned that about 11% of Canadians don't have access to drug benefits. Why don't we just have a plan that deals with that?
That's a concern that the politicians, the party in power being the Liberal Party, may attempt to mollify the New Democrats, with whom they have the agreement about with their minority government, offering a patchwork fill-in program for those who do not have benefits. And the downside of that is you lose the benefit of purchasing power. If there's a single payer system across the country, then we could have a group established that would negotiate prices with the pharmaceutical industry and get better prices. And the parliamentary budget officer has estimated savings of $2.2 billion with a B dollars per year. And other sources have estimated even higher savings in the cost of medications across the country if we had a single payer universal public pharmacare program instead of the patchwork system.
Let's explore that a little further. The federal parliamentary budget officer, who is an independent branch of the government and responsible for costing out federal programs, says that the program would cost $11.2 billion in the first year, and then in 5 years, it would cost more than $13 billion. Now, that seems like a lot of money when the government is already running a deficit. How is this a good deal?
Right now, people who aren't able to access medication for chronic conditions, and that's a large part of the problem. We have a lot of effective drugs that, when prescribed appropriately for people with chronic medical conditions, keep those people active, working at home. They're not visiting emergency departments. They're not being hospitalized. And the cost for emergency visits and hospitalizations in all the provinces would be reduced if we had a national pharmacare program that allowed people to get medications for the conditions they have when they need those meds, and that would keep people out of hospitals.
Those in favor of pharmacare say the federal government can negotiate lower drug prices since it purchases the drugs in such large quantities, bulk purchasing. Patricia, you raised this point. Isn't it already happening, though, through provincial drug support programs? Why do we need to double up?
Well, because we are not currently negotiating the quantities that we would be negotiating for if we had universal coverage, Rob. So yes, there are negotiations going on for the drug benefit program here in Ontario, for instance, but that covers a specific body of people. So people on social assistance, on disability allowance, and seniors. There's a gap of people between, up to age 25, I think now the coverage has extended to them. But between the ages of 25 and 65, those people without extended health benefits through their employer do not have any coverage at all. So there's a whole other volume of drugs required that are not being included in the purchasing negotiations.
The federal government is looking at an option to cover what is called catastrophic medicines. Those are super expensive. It would only be a fraction of the cost, and it could work in conjunction with provincial plans. Why is this not a good approach?
Well, again, catastrophic medications, I think of an example, the clot-busting drug, which people with symptoms of a non-bleeding stroke would receive in the emergency department. That drug, when I was practicing, cost in the neighborhood of $2,500. I'm sure the price is probably beyond that now, and other similar drugs that are life-saving in a catastrophe are priced that way because they're not used very often. And when there's a sole supplier because of patent protection, the drug company can charge pretty much what it wants to. And they will tell you they're charging the big bucks because they're trying to recover research and development dollars. But we know that research and development in Canada is not done on a regular basis. It's all done offshore because most of the drug companies here are multinationals. So the catastrophic drug class is a special group for a smaller number of individuals. And there are people with autoimmune disorders, for instance, that rely on these drugs to manage their symptoms so that they can continue with their daily lives. So they're not all necessarily life-saving like the clot-busting drug, but it's a special group. But going back to the essential list, and this was part of the Hoskins report too, we know that there are a number of medications that people who have chronic conditions like pain or arthritis or high blood pressure or heart problems, those meds are used by a lot of people, especially in our aging population. And negotiating the best price on that 135 or so drugs across the country would result in significant cost savings because of the volume every year.
So this option where the government, the federal government, would cover the essential medicines or help cover the essential medicines, like you describe, if they just did that, again, it would be less expensive. And again, why is this not sufficient in conjunction with existing provincial plans? Why can't we just do that, save some money, not cost as much, and help those who have the highest needs? Bob, how would you respond to that?
I think Pat has pointed out, and I tried to point out earlier, some of the issues that are involved, but I want to come back to the cost. So Hoskins report says it's going to cost $3.5 billion to cover half of all prescriptions. And if we just look at the federal government, for example, the civil service is going to save $7 billion just from cutting down on outside consultants and international travel. So if we compare health, and pharmacare is part of health and essential service, this is not an expensive program. And in fact, it would not all be introduced in one step. So there would be cost savings that would be able to be demonstrated at all levels, which, and then as with Medicare, it would progress through the stages, starting with the most essential.
Wouldn't provincial drug plans and insurance companies benefit from federal purchasing agency buying all the drugs for the entire country?
Well, Rob, if the the idea is with national pharmacare, the federal government would give transfer payments to the provinces and territories, and the pharmacare program would be negotiated through each province. There'd be quite a rollout because we have such a complicated healthcare system in Canada. So no, we would not be involving insurance companies then, because eventually when you get universal drug coverage across the board, and that would take some time to implement, and the political will to implement, and the cooperation of the provinces and territories, there's a lot of ifs here. But once that all came together, the business that the insurance companies currently get by providing those prescription drug benefits would be gone.
Are you seeing this then as a staged item? I know that there is pressure right now on the Liberal government to roll out a plan and get some form of pharmacare passed before the end of the year, which is like 2 months away. Less than that, if you take in the fact that we're going to be going into Christmas, which little happens over that period of time. So do you see some level of this being you see this being rolled out in stages? Is that what I heard you say?
Yeah. Yes. That is the recommendation right from when
Eric Hoskins. So what's the first stage going to look like then, Bob?
What they would categorize as essential medicines.
Now, I wonder, this is going to have a huge, huge impact on the insurance industry and on drug companies, as Patricia was talking about earlier. What's going to be the fallout from that aspect of this?
Well, I'll pick up here. Insurance companies currently also fund extended benefits for dental care, foot care, vision care. They've still got their hand in the pie of healthcare in other avenues. So they're not totally bereft of income, because our healthcare system is still a patchwork. Even if and when we do have a full rollout of a national universal single-payer pharmacare program?
If we look at the pharmaceutical companies, they are foreign-owned. The profits go outside of the country and often even don't go to a specific country because of the way they manage their finances. I don't want to get into that. But we used to have a world-class production facility, the Connaught Labs, in Canada. If we're going to have secure pharmaceuticals, we need to be able to look at producing those pharmaceuticals within our own country and having control over quality and production so that private deals don't have to be negotiated in times of crisis with multinational pharmaceutical companies that can put a lot of pressure on our governments, and it means that the public are not involved in those discussions at all.
Well, just to follow up on that, I mean, a few months ago, there was a story that came out about drug pricing. And there is an agency already that monitors drug prices now. And it's supposed to protect Canadians from pharmaceutical companies gouging. But it was getting a hard time from those companies. Can we really trust that the government is going to get a good deal on bulk pricing in light of this?
Well, that's a big question. The word trust is what makes it really big. Again, with the cooperation of the provinces, I think we have a much better bargaining position with a drug advisory committee that has the authority to speak on behalf of the provinces and territories to negotiate those prices. And we know those prices are less in other countries with healthcare programs and pharmacare programs in place. So maybe we need people who are better bargainers, better negotiators at the table. That's about all I can say, Rob.
Well, the other factor is, Robert, I think, is that we have to trust government. We have to know them, but we also then would have the information completely on the public record. What has happened in the last number of years, COVID is an example, that information is not available to anybody to scrutinize. And so there are lots of experts and professionals, medical associations and the rest, that would keep an eye on these things because it impacts everybody. It impacts their patients. Right now, they can't find any of that information many times.
You know, when you talk about rolling this out in phases, I think about how the dental plan has been rolled out, and it was rolled out with starting out with young children and et cetera. And now it seems to be frozen, and the rest of the commitments to expand it to other parts of our society have been delayed or are not. We don't know when they're going to start, really. Isn't this going to be another one of those if we just roll this out bit by bit? We're going to get, you know, maybe partial plan, part this, part that, whatever the government decides. And then who knows when the next time we'll follow up. Maybe it'll be another 10, 15, 20 years before we see any more changes. Why can't this just be an all or nothing proposition? Or how do we avoid that? Maybe that's the better question. How do we avoid that?
Well, Rob, I would suggest we really need to inform Canadians that this is where we are and encourage them to get involved and to speak up if they think that a universal single payer pharmacare program in Canada is a good idea. Then learn about it, speak to your politicians, provincial and federal, speak up, and let's have our voices, you know, make our voices heard.
But I mean, why is there a need for a local group like yourselves to be involved in this campaign? I mean, people are distracted trying to keep food on the table and a roof over their heads while paying their bills. Is this really the time to be pushing for pharmacare? Bob, what do you think?
Well, I think it is because the people's capacity to buy other essential things are directly impacted. If a member of their family has a serious health problem that requires pharmaceuticals, then they have to set aside those other issues. This is a huge cost. And all of the surveys that have been done so far show that a majority of Canadians are in support of pharmacare. And in fact, I think many of us who've been looking at that realize that, yes, there would be a rollout in stages. And in fact, the principle would be that those who have wealth would eventually pay more tax for everybody to have that service. But again, because people would have more spending power if they weren't focusing on those essential pharmaceuticals, the money would be redistributed in the Canadian economy and not go outside the country.
The NDP have threatened to end its supply and confidence agreement if the proposed drug plan does not meet its expectations before the end of the year. This could potentially throw the country into an election. Is this something either of you want? Patricia, I'll let you go first.
No, I do not think an election at this time is a good thing for the country. But I fear that there may be a plan put forward by the Liberals for a patchwork system to just target a specific demographic, part of the population, rather than rolling out initial stages of a single universal public pharmacare program. So there's a risk here. Yes, there's a risk.
Can you describe the difference between those two things that you just described? Because to me, they sounded the same. What's the difference between what you said in the first case and what you said in the second case?
A patchwork versus a universal single-payer program?
Because you said that we'll be rolling out a single-payer program, but yeah. If we're doing that in stages, how is that not a patchwork?
Well, the patchwork concern is that the target group ages 25 to 65, that may be the group that the Liberals roll out as we will cover meds for these people and ignore all the rest of it. So it would not then be the start of a universal national pharmacare program. It would just be another piece like the pieces we've had before. That's a big concern because that reduces the possibilities of the larger purchasing power for the full population of 37 million Canadians if we covered everyone when things are rolled out.
Bob, where do we go from here?
Well, I think it's important to have community conversations. People within Northumberland, people in every community have an input with their MPs, with their MPPs, because the provincial government's involved, with each other. That's the basis for meaningful change. And I think if there is a forum for people to have those discussions, a town hall or whatever format that would take, that would give a very clear message in terms of where people stand. I don't want to speak for the rest of the public. I've spoken to many people on this, but I do believe that in a democracy, we have to have those discussions. And especially when governments no longer regularly have committee meetings where people can go and present these things, it makes it very difficult for most people to raise the questions or to express the concerns. And I think the essence of democracy is public participation. So I think that's the critical step.
How many members are there in the local chapter of the Council of Canadians?
A membership is approximately 50. But we also are part of a coalition of other community and environmental groups that meet together and share information. So we work cross organization, and we work not only at the local level, but at the provincial and national level that way. So I'm involved with pretty well all of those organizations at those levels.
Bob Garrison, Patricia Sinnott, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Rob.
That was Bob Garrison, a director with the local chapter of the Council of Canadians, and Patricia Sinnott, a retired pharmacist and volunteer with the local chapter of the Council of Canadians. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.